Yeah, Diddy, I can hear you. There's certain things in life that you can stop. There's certain things in life that can't be stopped. Let's go.
I wonder how much he would have had to pay for that to get him out of. That would have achieved that little bit at the start, surely not.
Well, it goes over the whole, that's what I mean, it's that sample goes over the whole song, so yeah, it'd be interesting to sort of find out what sort of cash Diddy's pumping.
No, Diddy's got
that's the money is money is no object for Diddy.
Yeah, that's probably like a dollar for him. anyway, welcome to the Final Pay Podcast. This week, like the last 4 weeks, we're breaking down episode 9 and 10 of The Last Dance, the final two episodes of The Last Dance, which I don't know, it finished nicely. I mean, we knew coming out of episode 8 what was going to happen with episode 9, starting off with the Indiana Pacers.
Well, they sort of teased that at the end of the end of 8 as well. These last two episodes are obviously going to be, their toughest. Well, as MJ says, like their toughest test. And even though after the Utah series in 1998, he says that they were an extremely tough competition as well. But the Pacers took them to 7 in that Eastern Conference Finals in 1998 before they actually played the Utah Jazz. And Utah had in 1998 anyway, the Utah actually had home court advantage this time. So
yeah,
game 6 and 7 were actually going to go through Utah and not through Chicago. So that would have made it, that made it just that little bit extra difficult. And as they sort of, reiterate in an earlier episode, I think it was episode 4, where they lose that match. It might have been episode 5 where they lose against Utah, where they blow that 24 point lead in Utah, just before the All-Star break, and that's essentially the straw that breaks the camel's back. Like, if they win that game, then you take a game off Utah and you give it your game to Chicago, and Chicago actually has home court advantage then.
That's true. So, very true.
And they set it up beautifully as they're going into after the Eastern Conference Finals. They essentially get on a plane and go straight to Utah. Utah's waiting.
Well, if episode 9 started off with a little bit of Reggie Miller, actually, it sort of began.
Time.
Yeah. My God, he's a pure shooter. It was ridiculous how sweet he showed us.
Just Reg, man. It's, I mean, not just a pure shooter. Like, you couldn't leave him alone. Not that great a dribbler to sort of get around to people, but there's stats out there that, I think it's like 14 straight seasons, he averages between 16 and 22 points.
Yeah.
And even in his last season when he was 39 and he still averaged like 15.6 points per game. Like, shooting will never leave you if you can get your shot off like Reg could. Just, unbelievable. He was there. Yeah, I mean, even in that last season that he had. So, as I said, about time that we got ourselves a little bit of Reggie Miller.
Yeah, he was the kind of guy was when he's hot, he was literally unstoppable. Well, I thought he was definitely unstoppable. When he got hot, he no one could play against him because he had a really red hot streak.
No, that's right. And when you play for him too, when you play that pick and pop type game, he can come off a screen and then just flash out a 3-point line. He's got a quick shot, and it's hard to stop. And he was a good shooter when he first come into the league, but just developed into one of the most deadly shooters that the league had ever seen.
Unfortunately, he was going up against the person. He ended up calling, instead of Michael Jordan, Black Jesus.
Yeah, that's so right. Yeah. Calls him Black Jesus. And then even in press conferences, calling him that Black Cat. That was it. I guess sort of his little pet name for him that he kept calling him during press conferences and stuff like that. As long as Chicago's got that black cat on that team, then yeah, they're gonna be a real hard out.
Well, Indiana did in that 1998 Eastern Conference Finals. I thought they had the better team. At least on paper, they had the better team.
On paper, I think they did. They probably used their bench guys a little bit better, but they had more contributors, starters as well.
Yeah.
You know, Mark Jackson, who's there, is one of the best assist men ever in the league. Reg, the Davis boys. Chris Mullin, who was probably on his way out, but you still had to respect what he could do.
Yeah.
Rick Smits.
Yeah.
Jalen Rose, you know, a young Jalen Rose. Like Larry Bird, it was his first year as head coach, and Larry comes in and says that he thinks that was their absolute best opportunity to win a championship.
At the start, the Bulls did go up 2-0 on the series, but then they did fight back. I mean, Miller led the Pacers to that game 3 win, but that game 4 was easily the best game of that series.
That game 4. And even the sequence of events that happens, you know, in 6.4 seconds in that game, you know, it's tied. Scottie Pippen gets fouled. Scottie's fairly reliable at the free throw line. Misses one, misses two. Yeah, Indiana's still down one. There's 2.9 seconds left. They go down the other end. They draw up a perfect play for Reg to sort of come off a little bit of a screen. Gives MJ a nice big fat shove to get him free. And
yeah, it was a shove. It was definitely a shove.
Barry's a tough shot. Yeah, Reg admits it in there. He said he gave him a little bit of a shove. I think it was more of a little bit of a shove, as if anybody who has seen the documentary you would see. The thing is, there's still 0.7 seconds left. Like he gave them enough time for Michael, for a little bit of heroic at the end, and man, was that shot rolled in, rolled out. My god! It literally
went in. Like if it went in and then somehow popped out,
and then rolled back out. Like unbelievable! Like that's a playoff game. Like you know, that's everything on the line.
Yeah.
If they go down 3-1 and they'd lost in. At Market Square Arena in India and in Indianapolis, that's a dagger. But you know that's a crazy 6.4 seconds in that game.
Yeah, well, Scotty's 2 missed free throws was a bit unusual. Scotty, at least. Yeah. They weren't great free throws either. So
no, they were two doinks off the hoop. They didn't even look like going in.
And then flash back, like you said, to June 97, where the Bulls were matched up against the Utah Jazz, who were making their first finals appearance as well, behind league MVP Karl Malone, which was MJ's motivation
he had fuel. I don't think he was too impressed with that. And like you said as well, he said he had nothing but respect for Karl Malone, but that's just. Anything that's the slightest little bit of slight, you know, towards him or anything, he's just one motivated human being that'll just take the tiniest little thing that you have against him, and he'll just turn it into fire for himself. It's unreal.
Yeah, it is. That game one series, it wasn't only Karl Malone, but that other fire was Byron Russell, who was on his
list. Byron Russell as well. It happened there. That's right. It all started then. Yes, yeah. He comes up to him. I can't remember how the situation occurs, and he comes up to him. He's like, "Why you quit? Why you quit?"
He was
a rookie. He was a rookie when he quit. When MJ went to baseball.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was a good serviceable player.
I don't know how the series of events come for him to say that. So, which is ridiculous. But
yeah, it's mad. But that, and it's just straight away, like the very first game in Chicago, and he hits that jumper, right over the top of him, And it's just that's a taste of things to come, young fella. That's a taste of things to come.
Look, Jazz did come back. They were able to tie that series in game 3 and 4 and then heading into that make or break set of game 5, which inevitably was called the flu game.
Well, it's called the flu game. That's right. That's right. The myth behind the flu game. It's sort of been exposed a little bit now that it's not necessarily the flu game anymore. It's now the food poisoning game.
Well, okay, yeah. So the reason it's called the food poisoning game is Jordan's finally come out and said, "God, that's a nugget of information." Like they've been calling.
How did he keep that to himself for such a long time?
And he's known that they've been calling it flu game for that long. So anyway, he had a trainer in his room, and I think it was his trainer in the room, and there was like a strength and conditioning guy. But basically, Jordan was like 11:30, and Jordan got super hungry, even though everybody else had eaten.
Everybody else had eaten, and this is something that they dive into on the Jalen and Jacoby after show when they talk to Jason Hare afterwards. That everybody else had had dinner. Michael hadn't had dinner, and he was starving.
They rang around and they could only find one place open. Was a pizza place about 5 miles outside Utah, apparently.
Their hotel was 5 miles outside Utah, outside Salt Lake City. This was a pizza place in the city. They were turfed at a hotel outside the city.
The pizza turned up, but the weirdest thing out of all of it is five people turned up with the pizza.
Five people.
Why five people deliver one pizza?
Well, the way that they sort of break it down a little bit on the after show is you know, it's a little bit fishy. People must know that hotel outside of Utah is where Chicago's staying. You know, whether or not one of the guys that works in the pizza place knows somebody that works at the hotel, a little bit of info's exchanged. You know, maybe this is going to, this could be going to, you know, to say for the purposes of this story, room, 522, and they'll go, they'll be like, hey, that's Michael Jordan's room. So whether or not this so-called food poison pizza was done by any of these five delivery guys or somebody at the actual shop. Nobody really knows. But another little nugget that come out in the after show as well is apparently it's one pizza. He's just like, everybody get the F away from this pizza. This is all mine. I didn't get dinner. Everybody else did. This is all mine, and he proceeds to spit on the pizza. That's a good way to make sure that nobody else gets any pizza, isn't it?
I get that. To me, it all sort of sounds like that these people knew. Well, didn't know who was going to have the pizza, but well, maybe they did, but at least knew that this was going to go to a Chicago room, so they probably did put something in that pizza.
Well, you may as well hedge your bets. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if it's not going to Michael's room, then, you know, maybe Bill Wennington might get sick.
Well, and God, you could tell too when he turned up, Jordan was just white.
He was gone. He couldn't sleep, rolling around on the floor. Yeah, stomach cramps. Spewing, shiting everywhere. Like couldn't hold anything down. He had to have an IV. Like he couldn't keep any fluids in.
And it turned out like at the start, like during that game, I guess if we could go on to the game, he wasn't shooting that well at the start.
So he was ordinary to start, and Chicago got off to a slow start as well.
And he was just sweating bullets, like you could just he was just sweating all that the food poisoning out or the sickness out. And then he just I don't know what happened. Like it's like he just either a second wind or something happened, and he just absolutely explodes.
That IV starts kicking in, I suppose.
He explodes.
You can see it. You can just see it on his face. Like they've got the cold pack on his head, and he's and it's fallen off. Like you can just see that he is just absolutely buggered. They're handing him a cup of Gatorade, and he has a little bit of a sip out of it, and then he sort of sits back, and then you know the Gatorade falls out of his hand and spills everywhere. Like it's you could just he was done. Every time he got on the bench, but when he stepped in between the lines on the court, it was the same thing. He's just unbelievably driven, and he wasn't gonna let this, you know, let them go down 3-2 in the series essentially.
So for someone that had food poisoning literally, and I wouldn't say the night before, early morning probably. So he spiked for 38 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, and 3 steals.
44 minutes. Plays all but 4 minutes.
All but 4 minutes. It's insane. It's flu, food poisoning, whatever. Like that's you can't like.
It just sounds better. Flu game sounds better.
It's inhuman. It's obviously him, but it's just inhuman. What he does. It's absolutely inhuman.
And again, like, you know, the sequence of events that happens at the end of the game as well, they claw their way back to 85 all after being down 12 at the start of the game. Yeah, they claw all the way back. I think it's a Pippen shot. Tony Kukoc gets a massive offensive rebound, sets up again. They get a nice fresh 24. They can burn more clock. And that offensive rebound leads to a Michael Jordan 3. And that essentially puts them up 90 to 88, and that's the final score of the game. It's just like, man, just unbelievable.
Yeah, and then sort of it takes a weird sort of shift to Steve Kerr, that episode 9. It I guess then Steve Kerr's importance to the Bulls, which look Steve Kerr knew and did say he was a. Role player is probably the best way to put it the Bulls.
Role player, but that's I mean you go back through especially those even the 90 you know the 96 the 96 series playoffs the 97 and the 98 playoffs, man, Steve Kerr hits some big shots late in games, man.
I think I'm just dirty because Luke Longley still hasn't been there, so that's probably I'm probably yeah. taking on Steve Kerr unfairly, to be honest. But
that's what I mean. The most of those guys, there's probably 7 guys on that team that have significant roles in this, and unfortunately Luke Longley is one of them, and he just didn't want any part of this at all.
He didn't want any part either.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, he must have an extremely sour taste in his mouth, you know, with his relationship with Michael Jordan. So you can't fault the guy, whether or not he was one of the guys that was picked on as well, not just Scott Burrell, that we've seen multiple times throughout these 10 episodes that Scott Burrell just, man, he just keeps copping it. I don't think it's every episode is a piece of Scott Burrell trash talk. So, he's just such a nice, mild mannered guy. Just took it with a grain of salt and he was even in that. Just watching today, the game 6 that was on ESPN today, the game 6 of the 98 finals. He plays a big role. He plays like 23 minutes. Like he plays.
Yeah.
Scott Burrell.
Oh, Scott Burrell. Yeah,
He's coming in and filling in for Scottie Pippen a lot, which we'll get onto it when we get onto the next episode and we actually talk about the 98 finals. But, yeah, the Steve Kerr, you know, I get the Steve Kerr love because I guess it sort of comes into a same situation that it has with Michael and I guess the way that their fathers – or no longer with us anymore, as they go into in the story.
And that's when Steve Kerr's father, he was a teacher, I guess is probably the best way to put it, or a scholar, and he went to
he was in Beirut.
Beirut, that's right, which is going through well, massive turmoil, but they did not like U.S. people over there at all.
Ooh, they don't.
So, unfortunately, they're going into details. His father passed away, but like you said, that was their connection. And that clutch jumper that he got in that game five was just, I mean, and like Jordan had faith in him. Well, that's game five against Utah in that finals. It was just, game six. It was, yeah, like he basically said to him on the bench, he said, "You're going to get the ball.
Yeah, be ready.
Be ready. Yeah.
Be ready, because they're going to come over. They're going to double team, and he's going to be, yeah, you see Jordan jump up, raise up, and then just passes off. Steve Kerr comes in from the wing, catches the ball at the top of the key, splash, nothing but net. Like, just, yeah, just clincher. And that's it. He knew it. He knew it straight away.
He loved it, too. He played it when they had their fifth championship there. Championship Chicago in front of all the Chicago fans.
The championship ceremony was great.
And he basically said, told Phil, yeah, no, it's all right. You can draw the play up for me. Or it was along those lines. I should have wrote it down. Because, but yeah, like, yep, the Phil, I don't care what everyone says, but the play was drawn up for me. Michael knew it. Phil knew it. Everybody knew it. And here we go.
Here we go. I have to bail Michael out again.
Yeah. That's right. Oh, that's so good.
Oh man, like he was probably hungover as hell, but for him to come up and that's for me. Like I said, that's the pivotal shot of that series. From then, not even so much then, but you know, it also stems back to, you know, earlier in the season where they get into that little bit of a stoush. And Steve Kerr doesn't take a back step to him, and Michael, yeah, he's got his respect, and yeah, now exactly. He's got to trust him on the court, and he absolutely trusts him on the court.
Yeah, exactly right. Like he, and then Steve, like look, I'm probably taking it on Luke Longley, but Steve Kerr as a role player was a crucial part of that Chicago Bulls, and you could even just he's. Being the current coach of the Golden State Warriors, you can see that sort of coming through in the Golden State Warriors, at least.
No, that's the thing as well. Like, you know, he's got that sort of championship DNA ingrained into him. And I've seen a meme, the other day. It was like every championship from 1994 to 2000 and 2001 or something like that, or 2000, either had Robert Horry or Steve Kerr. Because Steve Kerr at the end of the 98 series is traded to San Antonio. And San Antonio wins the 99 championship in the 98-99 season, which was shortened by the lockout.
Yeah, so that's, he's got a four-peat technically.
Yeah, right, yeah. He's got three red rings and one black and silver one.
They flash forward then to the 98 finals, to game seven, actually, because the Bulls were forced to a game seven. I think it was the second time they were forced to a game seven.
Only twice out of all that run that they'd ever been taken to a game seven. Yeah. Obviously, they'd never been taken to a game seven in the NBA finals. But only the second time that they'd been taken in that playoff run, in that championship. A lot of playoff runs with Michael and Scotty and Phil that they'd ever been taken to a game seven. And he and MJ come out and said in addressing the media before the game as well. He's just like, we will win game seven. We will win game seven. And it's just like, that's just like super bold words to come out and just have. He's got confidence. That's him. But he also come out and say that.
Oof. He did have his motivation for that game was one of his security guards, Gus Lett, who was like a second father to him when his father did sort of pass, and Gus was going through some issues health wise as well, and he said to him, he goes, "Gus, you know, I'm winning this for Gus, basically." So it felt like to me, just watching that back, like Indiana really could have pulled that off, like pulled that upset out of the bag, basically.
Absolutely could have.
Right up until that jump ball, I guess. That was won by the Bulls in the fourth quarter. It just... That's right.
It just...
Yeah.
But even if it's even as they set the game up as well, the game plan was that they were just going to feed the Davis boys, feed Rick Smits. If they're going to put Tony Kukoc out there, that was the game plan. They're just going to put whoever, whether it's Rick Smits, Dale Davis, Antonio Davis, they're going to put him on Tony Kukoc. They're going to find their way over there because they've got Mark Jackson. Who's basically he's running the show, and Kukoc is just getting torched by everybody down low. Like he just cannot handle the physicality of guys like Dale and Antonio Davis. Like absolutely cannot, and they're just murdering him during the game.
Yeah, he didn't. He was a bit of a non-factor as Tony Kukoc in that game. Actually, like you didn't see much of him really. He was a bit of a non-factor, Tony. Unfortunately,
when you're getting down so much on defense, like it just takes its toll. You just can't get into a rhythm offensively if you can't cut and make slashes to the hoop and do things like that. He just would have been absolutely stuffed.
So they it turned into after that jump ball turned into a Steve Kerr 3-pointer to tie it up. Obviously, then the Bulls went
wide.
On.
Open three.
Well, because of their jump ball. That's what I said, the jump ball that they won. It's just
Rick Smits versus Michael Jordan. Smits actually wins it, essentially, and tips it straight to Scottie Pippen.
Exactly. And he found Steve Kerr on the, I think it was on the other side straight away. He threw it all the way.
They swing it all the way to the other side, and he's just got daylight between him and a defender. And it's, just a huge three. And then from there, the rest of that game, the rest of the momentum change, I think there's about 2.5 minutes left in the game. And that's it then. That's the dagger. That far out from the end of the game, that just completely changes the momentum of the game. And they just, the Chicago just take over after that.
They literally take over, and they just run away with it. It was pretty much all over after that. They knew too. Well, Larry knew at least. He did say it, Larry Bird. So, I did find it funny just finishing on that episode 9 when MJ went over to meet Larry Bird after that game in the back, and he said, "Well, we might as well." No, you say what you can say what they say. I can't say it right now.
I think there's a few expletives about it. He calls him a bit of a female dog. Calls him a bit of a bitch. But there's also some more expletives that he says as he's walking away and
Without saying those words. Enjoy yourself, dog. UB. F you all gave us a run for your money. Now go and practice your golf game.
Go work on your golf game.
Oh my God, it was just typical Jordan. That pretty much.
Well, that's right.
Then segues into episode 10. The Jazz into those sort of, I guess, the finals, the NBA finals, the 98 NBA finals. The Jazz took game one in overtime. And then the Bulls then ended up coming back and winning that game two in Salt Lake.
That's you could tell that Utah, obviously being in the NBA Finals the year before, but Utah was super confident in 1998, super confident. Even though, like I said, even though that first game goes into overtime, and at the end of regulation, it's like 79 all. Like these games are just a lot of these games are just slugfests. The pace of the game is grinded right down. There's a lot of free throws, especially in this series. In 1998, it ends up being 88-85 at the end of regulation. At the end of overtime, and like you said, in game two. Chicago, they steal home court advantage back.
Yeah.
I think it was like a 5-point win in Utah. But as they finish that series in Indiana or against Indiana, that they get straight on a plane and they're straight to Salt Lake City, and you could just tell they're running on empty. They are just running on fumes.
Yeah, definitely. You could just, they were very lethargic. You could sort of see it in their body. Up until that game three, of course, which...
game three. Holy...
Oh, my geez. God. So they not only beat Utah by 42 points, which is great in itself, but they hold Utah to 54 points total, is just unheard. That would never happen in this day and age in these games. Not only
a finals record, not only a playoff record, but an actual league record for least amount of points by any team in the shot clock era.
Teams
these days got that 5 minutes into the second quarter.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That just doesn't happen in this day and age, not anymore. But it, oh my God, it didn't seem like defensively. I think it was more that they weren't getting any offensive shots than more than the Bulls weren't just defensively great. It just, I didn't think Utah had great offense in that game. That was to me.
No, I think that was it too. I think a lot, yeah, and it's the same goes for a lot of teams. Like your role players generally play better at home. Their role players, guys like Shannon Anderson, Howard Eisley, Chris Morris, Jeff Foster, all of those guys, they're not having the impact. Karl Malone, there's two studs in Karl Malone and John Stockton aren't getting anything. The third wheel there is essentially Jeff Hornacek. He's not getting anything. So it's just one of those games that happens. I think Utah were number two or number three in offense that year. So I guess it's just one of those little anomalies that happens in the NBA, you know, in basketball. They're just a culmination of everybody playing like crap.
Everybody, literally.
Yeah, literally everybody.
So just before game four,
well, it's the next day. It's the next day after game three.
The Bulls had the practice, like, you know, that was all, I guess, really just sort of cut and dry and just the way that normally happens. Except for one person, named Dennis Rodman. He decided to skip
practice. He wasn't at practice that day. Where was he? Where did he go?
He decided to skip practice and show up at a WCW Nitro event with Hulk Hogan. no one had an idea. The team, no one had an idea what he was doing.
Nobody had a clue.
It was, I mean, for us as wrestling fans, well, look, we weren't into WCW, or well, I wasn't into WCW back then, so I'm not going to talk up that, but just as wrestling fans, I just find it absolutely hilarious. Like, it just
sound a bit like this. How can you not like this music?
He walks out to the NWO music with, like, him, Hulk Hogan, and generally with NWO, there's like 5,000 other people straight after him.
There was a million Klingons at the NWO.
Klingons. Funnily enough, in that one night, he made $250,000, plus had to use private jet, and was only fined $20,000 by the team. So. Good bit of business, as Ron Harper would put it. So
that's right. Yeah, Ron Harper just comes straight out and says, "There, that's a businessman right there."
Funnily enough, You know, and to me, that's just Dennis being Dennis. I mean, I didn't know I didn't realize that happened. I mean, I didn't realize
it happened in the middle of the finals. I knew that happened, yeah. And later on in the year, I can't think of the pay per view event that WCW had, and it was a tag team match with Hulk Hogan and Rodzilla. Get the name right, Rodzilla versus Diamond Dallas Page and Karl Malone. Oh, so. Man. Yeah, they sort of got themselves and in game six, it spices up a little bit between Dennis and Karl Malone too, which I guess we'll get to in a minute as well.
But even in that game four, it didn't seem to distract Dennis Rodman at all, because he knocked down two very, very late free throws, and he had
clutch free throws, yeah. Clutch.
And that sort of, and that even I think it was that clutch rebound as well. Like he nothing deterred him at all. And they went up 3-1. They did. He was not deterred. It was hilarious seeing it. But.
And that's the thing too. Like, you know, as they go on with it as well, they talk about Dennis and you know he's sort of that wild kid now that runs around. I think I sort of said it earlier that throws rocks at cars and. And you know, like, you know, likes throwing mud pies at other kids and everything. But when the dinner bell's called, he's back and he's going to be in bed. You know, he's going to give you, well, whether it's he's in bed with Carmen Electra or Madonna, whoever else.
Which but, we got a young Carmen Electra during that too, which was awesome.
Yeah,
we got a younger one, not an older Carmen.
No, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we got Carmen Electra in a prime there.
We did. but yeah, he was. He went, yeah, okay, he had the stuff off, and that's him. Like, that's what he did. He had the stuff off the court. When he was on the court, it was all basketball. There was nothing.
All business, 100%. And that's the thing. The three guys in that organization all trusted him. Phil Jackson, Scottie Pippen, and Michael Jordan all trusted him.
Yep. They shift to game five, which Utah narrowly win. They survived it. Like, even that Jordan, so he was never going to miss it, get it, but that sort of heave he had at the end, Jordan.
The prayer that he throws up at the end. But Chicago was shocking in that game to start off in that game five, and that essentially cost them. Like, once again, they claw all the way back. Kukoc hits that massive three near the end. They're only down one. They end up getting another possession. Then Michael has the heave. It was never going in. Like, it was a big fat air ball. But Karl Malone in that game had 39 points. Like, let's not forget that. Like, that's the driving force behind that game five win was Karl Malone just having his way with. It didn't matter who was down low, whether it was Dennis, whether it was Bill Wennington, whether it was Luke Longley, whether it was Tony Kukoc, whoever was on him. Yeah, 39 points for Karl Malone. It was just massive.
Yeah, it was. It was definitely massive. Then they shift, obviously, to the game six back to Utah, which, again, they hadn't won in Utah all season. So
that's the only team they hadn't beaten all year was Utah.
Just before that, and game six, Scotty came in with a bit of a bad back anyway. He came in with a very, very suspect back.
Yeah. And then straight away, the first thing that Pippen does on the court, he has that dunk. Like, it's early. It's one of the second or third possession of the whole game. And he has that dunk. And you see him sort of start to grimace. Start grabbing his back, and it's just like, all right, here he goes, and he's coming off, and he thinks he's done. Yeah, he's saying to the training staff, I'm done, I'm done. Yeah, I don't know if treatment is going to do anything. So he goes to the locker room in the first quarter, and Chicago, they're just holding on in that game without Scotty there. Like, it just everything has to go through Michael, because the only real threat to score is Tony Kukoc.
Yeah, that's right. And I guess for Scotty, he was used more of a decoy than he played through the paint, which is ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous.
And he wasn't moving around that great, but some of the stuff that he did, I think he only ends up having 8 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists. But yeah, a total decoy. And he's essentially used as a point guard who's not going to shoot anything. You know, he's just there to feed the post, you know, kick it back out to him, and then essentially be a ball distributor, which is what he does best. But he just didn't have that offensive potency like Chicago would have liked.
No, that's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. It then shifted right to the end, I guess, to probably one of the best 41 seconds in an NBA Finals game ever. It's just got
everything. MJ fingerprints on everything.
Yeah.
On everything. So 41 seconds to go. Timeout Chicago. Yeah. They're going to go for a 2-for-1. And the ball comes in, goes to Jordan out on the right wing. Just burns Brian Russell. Just burns right past him. Scores a layup. They score in 4 seconds. And as they the next possession goes down there, nobody picks up Jordan. He comes behind. The ball gets fed into Karl Malone in the post. Dennis Rodman sort of got him on him, and Jordan comes in straight away. Massive steal. And you see, there's only about 17 seconds left on the clock. So it's essentially comes down to a one possession game. As he's dribbling down the court, Dennis Rodman is behind him. And as they sort of flick to Dennis during the interview and everything, he's just like, there's no point in him going down there. He's not passing that effing ball.
Just before that strip part, like he knew to go to that weak side, that because Carmelone wasn't going to see him. It was absolutely amazing.
No, crazy.
How he picked that up.
On a blind side. Karl Malone has got Rodman sort of pinned to his left a little bit. So, and that's what Dennis is trying to do as a defender. He's trying to use the baseline as a defender. So he's sort of on his left a little bit, trying to push Karl Malone to the baseline. And that just works in perfect for MJ to just come swooping in. And it's pretty much as soon as Karl Malone gets the ball in the post. I can't remember if it's from Hornacek or from John Stockton. He just comes straight in and just takes it straight in, just slaps down on it, just takes it straight out of his hands.
Yeah. And sorry, continue after Rodman. Yeah, when Rodman basically said you're going to shoot.
Yeah, that's right. And the other thing is too, like the Chicago still has a timeout.
Yeah.
And they're just like, no, we don't. And this is the championship caliber coach of Phil Jackson. That he's got absolute trust in everybody that's on the floor. He doesn't have to make offense for defense, player adjustments or anything like that. He's just like, nah, we're going to set this play up, and there's going to be no timeout where they can set a defense or anything like that. This is just it's MJ time.
And it ends up then going to. He ran the ball down. He crossed Russell, pretty much, really just crossed Russell. When he did cross Russell, everyone said he reckons he pushed off Byron Russell.
There's definitely no push off.
Byron Russell, on any still picture I've seen, was already going that way. So
His momentum's taking him that way. Jordan's just got his hand out there. I think it might have even been Bob Costas, who was interviewed afterwards. He said it's like a maitre d' with his hand on somebody, ushering somebody to a table.
Correct.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Just ushering somebody to a table. There's no push on it or anything like that. Gets himself open, hangs the gooseneck out there, and the thing was too in that fourth quarter. He's not shooting very well. He's tired. Everything's short. And that's why he leaves. you know, he leaves the hand up there because, yeah, he's trying to push through just that little bit more. Trying not to make sure he leaves that shot short.
It was just one of the most iconic shots ever. Like every still shot of that, of just the backwards picture of just all the Utah fans and then just that, yeah, that hang time with not only his hang time, but just his arm, like you just said, or his hand.
Yeah. Just leaving it up there.
It capped off obviously the perfect way to finish off title number six.
Three-peat.
It sort of finished off sort of nicely, but it quickly just became into the question of soon what became or what was going to be next for the Bulls, especially after Krause said, you know, basically it was Phil Jackson's last season.
Well, that's right. Yeah, Krause come out at the start of the year that this was going to be it.
Yeah.
This was Michael's last hit. That, you know, that they've been looking for trade partners for Scottie Pippen for a little while.
Yeah.
And essentially sort of come out and said that, you know, Phil doesn't want to go through a rebuild. You know, Jerry Reinsdorf, you know, he's the owner. He's the one writing the checks. So he's come out and basically said that they're just not going to have the money now. It's the perfect storm of a lot of these guys are coming off contract. He's going to have to start paying Steve Kerr. He's going to have to pay Ron Harper. He's going to have to pay Dennis Rodman. He's going to have to pay Scottie Pippen.
He said it would have been suicidal to bring everyone back at that point of their careers because of the increased price tag.
For who though? For his paycheck, like for his bank balance. That's the only thing it's suicidal for. The NBA still has the luxury tax back then. That's the only person it's suicidal for is him.
Yeah.
He's the owner. He's the one writing the checks.
Well, these were his words, but like you said, Jackson, even though he was offered again to come back, he said he didn't want to go through a rebuild, so he just stepped away.
No, he doesn't want to rebuild. He still wants to win titles.
Interestingly enough, but with Jordan, when they came back to the Jordan present time, Jordan said he would have signed another one-year deal with the Bulls if he wanted to run it back.
Of course he would. That's right. As they said, if they had have got the band back together, he said all of those guys all would have signed one-year contracts.
Yeah, which is very interesting how if that played out. Would have been very, very interesting.
Oh, that's right, and it plays into the hands as well of a lot of those guys. You know, they're veterans. They're coming. They're getting to the back end of their career, but they're not to foresee what was going to happen later. But that's the 98-99 season is a lockout shortened season.
That's right.
So that plays into the hands perfectly for Chicago if they put that team back together.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But unfortunately then Jordan then stepped away. It was then for a free-for-all. Jordan stepped away. Dennis Rodman was released. Steve Kerr, like you have said, was traded to the Spurs, and Scotty was traded to the Houston Rockets.
And subsequently got paid. So that's one thing that makes you happy.
As a sign and trade deal, but so
yeah.
And it's probably just Jerry Krause protecting himself. But he said his parting gift was because they got more money. Dennis got more money as a sign and trade deal. So very very. Well, it's probably just protecting his legacy, so to speak. Which he, you know, and they've all come at the end. They did say. Well, Scotty did say, with all the stuff that happened, you know, Jerry Krause was one of the greatest managers of an NBA side.
Because... No, that's right. That's right. As a general manager, you've got to put the right pieces around the top players.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had the right role players to come around those players. You know, Dennis Rodman's under no illusions that, you know, he's a starting caliber player, but he's offensive. He's a role player. Like in that game six, he has six. All Dennis Rodman has is like 7 points and 8 rebounds in that game six. Like that's it. But he has 4 offensive rebounds, 4 defensive rebounds. But him clearing out, like he doesn't have, and that's just me knowing what Dennis Rodman does. Like in that 98 series, like I think age was starting to get a little bit the best of Dennis because after he's gone. He only ends up playing like another 38 games total in the NBA with Dallas and the Lakers. Like that's it in two seasons. So he gets a little bit of cash on the side, but he's essentially done. And I think even in those 38 games, I still think he averages like 14 rebounds.
Just before we finish up, just when I mentioned Scottie Pippen's trade to the Houston Rockets, how the hell did the Houston Rockets not win with him, Hakeem Olajuwon, and Charles Barkley? I don't get it.
The San Antonio Spurs?
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. And, you know, I get it, but my God.
The Twin Towers, that's who stopped them.
Yeah, I just when I did forget honestly that Scottie got traded to Houston Rockets, but oh my God,
He was only there for two seasons too, I think, Scottie, and then he ends up going to Portland for four seasons.
But that's starting three at least. Oh my God, it's just obviously San Antonio, put a stop to that.
That's right. God, yeah. Well, and that's the thing, even the year before, like they run into a red hot Utah team. Yeah. The Houston was the one that were in the Western Conference Finals with Utah, and John Stockton's the one that sinks them. I think it was game six in that series in 1998 in the Western Conference Finals. John Stockton's the one that sends Utah into the NBA Finals. So Houston are not an afterthought. And that's the thing. The next year. Unfortunately, it's a thing. Hakeem Olajuwon's another year older. Like, he's no spring chicken in that side. Charles Barkley's no spring chicken.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure if Clyde Drexler was still on that team. You know, Scotty has just come off. Scotty's just come off what he's come off in Chicago. So, I don't think Houston were totally irrelevant. But I think that once again, they were an aging team. And San Antonio were up and comers, you know. They had the first draft pick and had Timmy Duncan. So you've got Tim Duncan and David Robinson in that squad. That's what I mean, the Twin Towers. They're just you couldn't stop them.
Couldn't stop them. Any final thoughts on The Last Dance, the whole 10-part series?
Love the insight. I think they probably could have showed a bit more. It'd be interesting to watch it again and to sort of, you know, to see more of what is behind the scenes and what isn't. Like, you know, there were supposedly 500 hours of behind the scenes footage for this season. So it'd be interesting to sort of, to go through. A lot of stuff has sort of come through in the aftermath of Horace Grant sort of taking extreme offense to this, like he's calling it, so-called documentary. He went on Chicago radio and just like unleashed on Jordan and thought that Scottie Pippen's portrayed in a bad way, and he's absolutely not a snitch, and he's not the one that sort of divulged a lot of the information for the Sam Smith book. He sort of unleashed a little bit in the aftermath of this. It's been super enjoyable. Not even if I wasn't sort of a Dennis Rodman sort of, you know, Klingon, and if he wasn't at the Chicago Bulls, like, this would have been super interesting. But without Dennis, this run doesn't happen. All the right pieces are there for this to happen.
That's exactly right.
Without Steve Kerr, this doesn't happen. You know, without Bill Wennington, this documentary just doesn't happen, man. Like, he had a huge role in this documentary.
If you're taking it one step further, President Obama put it perfectly. Without the Chicago Bulls, David Stern said it first, but without the Chicago Bulls, NBA doesn't really happen in 210 countries.
No, that's right. Yeah,
Obama came out and said
it was like 80. Yeah, it was like 80. Yeah. 80 countries that the NBA was in. After this, you know, six championships in 8 years, it's just boosting this. Yeah, they're in like 215 now.
And so without the Bulls, there was no. This is what Obama said, which is sort of now it reigns true. There was no American culture. That was what brought American culture forward.
That's what it was.
Black people, with NBA, then and basketball was cool. Like, wearing Jordans was cool. So
hip hop was mainstream. Like, it's just the culmination of what what Jordan was, what the Chicago Bulls were. Unfortunately, the Chicago Bulls franchise is far from what they were in those so-called glory days. They're definitely far from it as a franchise right now. But they've got those banners in the rafters.
Yeah, and they all that's right.
That's they're exactly not going away. Right.
And they're like, there has been teams, there has been Lakers, there certain teams that have, you know, won some straight and everything. But yeah, you probably what you've said it best. Like, it was just all the pieces, all the right places, and just having Michael Jordan, who still to me is the best player, NBA player ever.
Well, it's essentially sort of kicks off a golden era in the NBA, really. Like, that's just even when Michael goes away, like the game didn't really suffer that much. No, like, you know, you still had exactly right. still had your big men around, like, you know, your Shaquille O'Neals, your David Robinsons, your Hakeem Olajuwons, your Patrick Ewings, your Dikembe Mutombos, you know, those sorts of guys. Yeah,
Kobe Bryant coming through.
Well, yeah. That's right. You know, in 96, you know, you had a young Kobe Bryant coming through who's essentially, you know, he's going to be, I say a mirror image. He's a mirror image.
Yeah,
his game, his intensity is just an absolute mirror image of Michael Jordan.
He said it. He's freely said he mirrored his game against Michael Jordan.
That's right.
He's always said that. So
yeah,
it was definitely enjoyable. Good to get a little bit more insight. So
and it was good to
see some sport.
Oh my god, sport. Well, that's the thing. That was a good thing that filled in my day today. Was watching that game six. That game six from the 98 finals in Utah. Just some crazy just a slugfest. That game was a slugfest. And the one thing that I took a couple of things out of that game, but the big thing, you know, if you compare that sort of style of game to today's game, the 3-point shooting. So, 3-pointers attempted by Utah, 10 total. Not in the first quarter, total.
That's James Harden in the first 10 minutes.
Well, that is. That's James Harden in the first 6 minutes. total 3-pointers made by Utah, 2. Total 3-pointers attempted by Chicago, 10. Total 3-pointers made by Chicago, 4. Like, just
but that's intense.
Three of those 3-pointers are made by Michael Jordan.
Yeah, but that's just in tandem with, like, say the classic center as well. The classic center doesn't really so-called exist anymore. Now.
Oh well, that's right.
Dirty
but center, that's me. So. And your power forward as well. Like, you got to have a stretch forward these days. Not a bang up guy down low like Karl Malone was. He has that nice finesse, you know, up around the basket. A 6'8" guy has got an amazing fadeaway jump shot. Like, you know, you can tell why he's got a league MVP under his, you know, under his belt. Like, he was Karl Malone, as much as I didn't really like him that much back in the day, you got to respect the man. Like, when you watch those games back again, you just like, holy moly.
Like, and John Stockton as well. Like, that, it's really a shame they couldn't win a title. Unfortunately, it was against.
Well, that's it. Look how many people starved while Michael was around. Yeah, you've got Charles Barkley, you didn't get a ring. Karl Malone and John Stockton didn't get a ring. You know, Peyton and Sean Kemp. Even though Gary Payton snipers one in for the Miami Heat, he gets himself a ring there. But Reggie Miller, Patrick Ewing,
all of those
great players. Dikembe Mutombo.
All stopped
by Michael. And then when Michael left, Hakeem Olajuwon swoops in and grabs himself 2 rings. Happy days.
That's true. Oh, love it. Well, that'll do for the Last Dance Final podcast. next week will be probably a brief week off, and then the week after will be the third round of the revamped NRL season.
Give it to me. Give it all to me.
It's gonna be interesting to watch. I mean, there's still gonna be no fans clearly, but it's gonna be interesting with, you know, there's probably, well, one ref by the sounds of it. It's still going ahead, and just little things that are probably gonna change because of the whole COVID-19. So it'll be interesting to watch at least.
Yeah, there's going to be plenty of disinfected balls on the sideline, and yeah, there's going to be all sorts of crazy stuff. It'll be, you know, whether or not they're going to try and do maybe what the NFL were thinking about doing and try and pipe crowd noise into there. You know, whether I've seen some other places, you know, like I can't remember if in Korea they're sort of putting cardboard cutouts of people in the crowd and stuff like that. Like, you know,
did you realize what that was?
Yeah, or whether they've cardboard cutouts or blow-up dolls, you know, whatever.
I think, like, you can have a... Yeah, but see, this is the problem. Like, it's how many minimum can you have in there? Like, it's different, like, in a wrestling ring when you could have, like, 20 people. It's a bit of noise. It's okay. In a stadium, that's just... 20 people is not going to... Like, you're not going to do anything. You're not going to hear anything. You might hear one guy yell... Which would be awesome, just to hear one guy just yell random stuff, but still.
Yeah. Well, they're supposed to be playing out at Leichhardt, so you know they'll have random people peeking over the fence from houses and stuff like that. So you might be able to pick up a little bit of noise like that over the the ground microphones.
Don't forget to check us out on Facebook and Twitter at Final Play Pod. You should be able to get your podcast wherever you get your podcast now. Unfortunately, still except for Apple, but everywhere else you'll be able to get your podcasts.
Still get your fix.
You know, surely, like, if you don't have Apple, there's plenty of ways to get it. There's Podbean, there's Skype, there's from Gimco, there's still SoundCloud, there's everything you can get it from.
You can play it straight off Twitter. Like, it just, yeah, there's tons of ways to get it.
All right, have a good week, everyone. My name's Jason. I'm just going to say Luke Longley Smith.
Oh, the paying homage to Big Luke. And as always, I will pay homage to the worm. So I'll be Miles Worm Plum.
What about Miles Rodzilla Plum?
That should be a better one. Yeah, Miles Rodzilla Plum from now on.
He had some good moves.
Plumzilla.
In saying that, he had some good moves. He was a bit wily.
It'd be interesting to sort of go back and watch, you know, that man. He smashes DDP in the back of the head with a chair.
Yeah, like, he does.
He just owns him. Like, where did that come from?
But he ended up doing that diamond cutter on Diamond Dallas Page.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, and
it looked
flawless.
Yeah, so. Might have had a career, and, you know, $250,000 for one night. I'm sure that would have been a decent career path to go down.
Back then, WCW had the money to flash too.
Well, like you said, after that year, he did get released, so he did ply his trade a little bit in there. He would have got a bit of money for that, surely.
Yeah, that's right. He would have. Yeah, I mean, he made a pay per view appearance, so he would have paid her off for that.
All right, have a good week, everyone. See ya.
See ya.